Hello and welcome to The Music and the Movies, a program that looks at and listens to the sweet spot where music and movies intersect. In this hour, we ponder the special alchemy that happens when sound meets image, where music lovers and cinephiles come together. We explore a different theme in each episode, arranged around an idea or a person, and we delve into why some of our favorite movie moments are also musical ones. My name is Robert Horton. I'm a movie critic and historian and a member of the National Society of Film Critics. I'll play some music and talk about it in an attempt to get to the bottom of a lifelong fascination with why film is so especially intoxicating when music is involved. And at the end of each show, I'll round things off with the trailer, a particular cut that either didn't fit into the overall flow or has some special meaning to me or just so weird it deserves its own spot. So join us, won't you, for The Music and the Movies. Today's episode, Jazz Men Acting. There's been a lot of jazz in movies and a lot of jazz musicians who have appeared on screen over the years. So for the sake of sanity, we're going to narrow down our subject to a very particular slice of film history, movies in which jazz players have actually acted in the movie, that is not just shown up as part of a concert sequence for a film or some kind of, you know, single scene cameo under their real names, but examples of jazz musicians playing a character other than themselves. Usually these have been somewhat peripheral characters, trading perhaps on the celebrity of the musician and the chance to shoehorn some music into the movie. Although there have been exceptions, like Dexter Gordon's lead role in Round Midnight. That was an Oscar-nominated turn, which we will certainly get to later today. In this case, it is men only for this episode, mostly because it's just easier to narrow down the field that way into an hour-long show. So we're going to have to return to this subject with the women of jazz at a future date. All right, so this is our excuse to listen to some fine movie music. Most of it is jazz-inflected, and consider how well this casting stunt has worked over the years. Then at the end of the show, for the trailer, I will violate our self-imposed guidelines here because I want to get in one of my favorite jazz drummers for a rousing tune. We are going to begin with the first example that came to mind. Actually, it was kind of the inspiration for this topic, and one of the best movies that we're going to talk about today. Anatomy of a Murder, from my favorite movie year of 1959, is one of the cinema's great courtroom dramas, and it has a very fun score composed by Duke Ellington. But, so, what makes it of interest to us today is that Ellington also appears in the film, not as himself, but as a character who runs a little bar in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. The character's name is Pie-Eye. And one scene, he and James Stewart, who plays the wily lawyer on a tricky murder case, actually play side by side at the piano. Here's some music from the opening credits of the picture, and you can see how Ellington's music announces the adult subject matter, but also how it starts to swing.
Thank you.
the main title music from Anatomy of a Murder, possibly the greatest courtroom drama in film, composed by Duke Ellington, who also acts, not much, but very enjoyably, in that movie. So by 1959, Ellington, of course, was a giant figure in American music, true royalty, even if a newcomer to the business of composing an entire film soundtrack. And we're going to stay at that regal level for our next selection. If you're thinking about jazz players who show up in film, you've probably got the image of Louis Armstrong in your head because, you know, part of what went into Armstrong's status as one of the most famous men of his era was his occasional forays into film, turning up in Hello, Dolly to sing to Barbra Streisand or scatting with Bing Crosby in High Society or whatever. And we're going to pick one of Armstrong's performances where he is specifically called by a character name rather than just, you know, Louis Armstrong dropping in to lend his magic to a film. This is the 1961 movie Paris Blues, in which Paul Newman and Sidney Poitier play American jazzmen in Paris who are tempted away from their bohemian lives when two tourists, played by Joanne Woodward and Diane Carroll, visit the City of Light. And guess who composed the music for this movie? It was Duke Ellington again. Although the score also incorporates some of his older stuff, such as Billy Strayhorn's Take the A-Train. There's a great scene in the picture where Newman and Poitier are playing in their cellar club, and the place gets torn apart when Armstrong, playing a band leader named Wild Man Moore, leads his band into the place and starts trading solos with the Hepcats in Newman and Poitier's group. It's a raucous number here called Battle Royale. Thank you. show-stopping number there from the 1961 film Paris Blues. That one titled Battle Royale, composed by Duke Ellington. I wish the rest of the movie were as much fun as that number. You heard Louis Armstrong front and center there as he plays a band leader who gleefully challenges the other players to trade solos. Paul Newman's trombone is dubbed by Murray McEachern, and Sidney Poitier's sax is dubbed by Paul Gonsalves. In Paris Blues, Armstrong is mostly, you know, just sharing his iconic greatness, even if his character does have an actual character name. But we're going to turn to a much more substantial example of a jazz maestro on the screen. This one, Round Midnight, the 1986 film starring Dexter Gordon. The film's world, by the way, sort of overlaps with Paris Blues because it is set in 1959 Paris, mostly. And its central character, although fictional, is inspired by the kind of black American expatriate, especially a jazz man like Bud Powell, who went to Europe at that time because they could find themselves more appreciated and better treated in Paris than in their native country. Round Midnight was directed by Bertrand Tavernier, fine director, who had the inspired idea to cast a musician and not an actor in the lead role. You'll hear Dexter Gordon play his tenor sax on this number, the standard body and soul, joined by a strong cast of jazz players. Thank you. That is Body and Soul, taken from the soundtrack of Round Midnight, a song composed by Edward Hyman, Robert Sauer, Frank Iton, and Johnny Green, performed by Dexter Gordon on tenor sax, among others. You're listening to The Music and the Movies. I'm Robert Horton. We are considering some jazz players who graduated to acting in movies. Dexter Gordon was nominated for the Best Actor Oscar for his performance for that film, and he may have been calling on some of his own memories of being an expatriate musician. It's a wonderfully weary, very lived-in performance. Another jazz musician who spent a great deal of time in Europe and who also struggled with addiction was Chet Baker, the trumpeter whose matinee idol looks made him an automatic choice, however briefly, for the movies. After he came to fame in music in the early 1950s, not just as a trumpeter, but as a singular vocalist as well, Baker acted in really just a couple of films, including one shot in Italy that has the title Urlatori alla Sabara, which seems to have been translated as Howlers in the Dock, I guess. That 1960 film includes a musical interlude with Baker singing the song Arrivederci, which we will hear in Baker's unmistakable voice now.
Wipe off that tear as I whisper till we meet again. Arrivederci, though it's goodbye forever, let's pretend.
That is Arrivederci, written by the Italian songwriter Umberto Bindi, sung by Chet Baker in the film Howlers of the Dock, in which Baker also acts. made in Italy in 1960. Curious footnote to that film is that it came very early in the directing career of Lucio Fulci, a favorite of cult movie fans, whose later work is marked by a truly deranged approach to horror in the 70s and 80s. And by the way, that same song was used at the end of the very memorable 1988 documentary Let's Get Lost, Portrait of Chet Baker, movie that weaves a fittingly melancholy spell. Well, let's look at a giant of jazz, Miles Davis, whose music has been used in a number of films, notably soundtrack that he did for the French film Elevator to the Gallows, which we've heard on this show before. Miles Davis appeared in some movies. He was popped up as a street musician in the Bill Murray Scrooged, and he did a dramatic role in a Miami Vice episode, which I remember thinking was pretty cool at the time. But Davis's biggest acting part came in a fairly obscure Australian film from 1991, Dingo, which he plays a famous jazz musician named Billy Cross. Davis also composed the soundtrack in collaboration with the great French composer Michel Legrand. And we're going to listen to a couple of cues from that score. First, Concert on the Runway, which refers to a scene in the movie where Davis's band has made this unplanned landing at a remote Australian town. They start playing music right on the spot, followed by Going Home. And you're going to hear Miles Davis deliver a few lines at the beginning of this set.
I've been to a lot of interesting places, but I don't think I've ever had the pleasure of visiting Puna Flat. My name's Billy Cross. If you don't mind, we'd like to play something for you. We'll be right back.
music from the film Dingo, composed and performed by Miles Davis and Michel Legrand, along with a host of jazz all-stars there, a film in which Miles Davis plays a significant acting role. That movie was directed by Rolf Dahir, an unusual talent in Australian cinema, and apparently he didn't always have an easy time corralling Davis on the set, but the result is worth it, even if mostly for the music. You're listening to The Music in the Movies. I'm Robert Horton. We're talking today about jazz musicians who took a fling at acting. Let's highlight a very rare film from an interesting world of low-budget movie making. By the mid-1940s, Louis Jordan was a popular figure in music. Music that was sort of a cross-pollination of blues and jazz and boogie-woogie and big band. And along with being a sax player, he was a vocalist who had a particular knack for comedy songs. Jordan created a series of short films called Soundies that he shrewdly used to publicize his records and his live appearances. These were, you know, kind of precursors to music videos. And he graduated to feature-length movies made for what was then called the race circuit, films distributed to black theaters for black audiences. Actually, a fascinating kind of sub-story in film history. We're going to pick a tune from one of those films, 1947 movie Riet, Petit, and Gone, for one of the Jordan songs performed on that soundtrack, even though he played characters who had you know, different character names with some kind of dramatic plot device in place there. There was always an excuse for plenty of music in these movies. In this case, the song is Ain't That Just Like a Woman, in which the, shall we say, retrograde views espoused are not those of this show or its sponsors. By the way, check out the opening guitar figure on this and speculate on whether the young Chuck Berry might have been familiar with this song.
Messing with that old apple tree. Ain't that just like a woman? Ain't that just like a woman? Yes, that's just like a woman. They'll do it every time. Lot took his wife down to the corner store for malted. She wouldn't mind her business, boy, if she gets salted. Ain't that just like a woman? Ain't that just like a woman? Yes, that's just like a woman. They'll do it every time. Samson thought Delilah was on the square, till one night she clipped him for all his hair. Ain't that just like a woman? Yes, that's just like a woman. Ain't that just like a woman? They'll do it every time. Sure will. Just like a woman. Ain't that just like a woman? Yes, that's just like a woman. They'll do it every time. Satisfied. Ain't that just like a woman? Ain't that just like a woman? Yes, that's just like a woman. They'll do it every time.
That is Louis Jordan singing Ain't That Just Like a Woman from the film Riet, Petit, and Gone, in which he also starred. That song credited to Fleecy Moore and Claude Demetrius. The latter would go on to write some songs for Elvis. While Fleecy Moore was actually Jordan's wife at the time, he really wrote his songs, but they were credited to Fleecy in order to avoid a previous publishing deal he'd signed, something that became inconvenient when he went through an acrimonious divorce. I wonder why he was married five times. Another vocal performance coming up from a songwriter next. Hoagy Carmichael was already very successful as the author of Stardust and many other songs when he made his major acting debut in the 1944 classic To Have and Have Not as a piano player named Cricket, who holds court at the Caribbean Bar where Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall meet and strike sparks. Near the beginning of the film, when Lauren Bacall notices Bogart and would like to make sure that he notices her, like there's any chance he wouldn't do that, she sidles over to the piano and joins in with Hoagy Carmichael for a little bit of Am I Blue?
Am I blue? Am I blue? Eat these tears in my eyes, telling you. Am I blue? You'd be too. If each plan with your man done fell through, was the time I was his only one, but now I'm the sad and lonely one. So lonely was I, till today. Now he's gone and we're through. Was the time
I was his only one,
but now I'm
the sad and lonely one.
So lonely was I gay,
was I gay,
till today,
till today.
Now she's gone and we're through, baby.
Ooh, am I blue?
Am I Blue, written by Harry Axt and Grant Clark, performed by Hoagy Carmichael and Lauren Bacall in To Have and Have Not, one of the director Howard Hawks's hangout movies, where personality and character is somewhat more important than story. People sometimes defining themselves by song, as they do in that scene. Hoagy Carmichael would make another movie splash a couple of years later with a wonderful supporting role in The Best Years of Our Lives, once again gracing the piano and lending his hip, easy presence. Another jazz man whose personality jumped out of music and put him in pop culture at large for many years, his great talk show guest, I remember, was Buddy Rich, the drummer. And he was indeed a movie performer on occasion. There's a Buddy Rich performance in a lesser Jerry Lewis vehicle, Visit to a Small Planet from 1960, and a fairly long sequence of music and some dialogue from Mr. Rich. Here's a little bit of that sequence as an extraterrestrial, played by Jerry Lewis, tries to learn human dancing from a beatnik as Buddy Rich and his band play along.
There we go.
Crazy.
Thank you.
music from Visit to a Small Planet. It's soundtrack composed by Lee Harlein, that sequence featuring Buddy Rich in a small role as a band leader at a beatnik club called The Hungry Brain. Quite, I didn't realize the Foley work on that track was quite prominent there. That was Jerry and his partner slapping around the dance floor. You're listening to The Music and the Movies. I'm Robert Horton. This show's theme is jazz musicians who tried movie acting. Looking at a more recent jazz player for our next example, this time we're going to highlight Harry Connick Jr., who came to jazz prominence in the late 80s, and thanks to a telegenic style, an agreeable singing voice, very quickly came to the attention of movies and TV, contributing songs to the When Harry Met Sally soundtrack, for instance, and making his acting debut as a World War II airman in the 1990 film Memphis Belle, fitting role for someone who kind of has a vibe from a different era. We're going to look at his second film, 1991's Little Man Tate, the first film directed by Jodie Foster, about a lonely child genius. Connick does very nicely in a supporting role here. He does not contribute to the soundtrack. Instead, we have a jazzy score by Mark Isham, and we're going to hear a cue from that one titled Fred and Dee Dee. Music from the film Little Man Tate, composed by Mark Isham, which we're looking at here in our survey of movies featuring jazz musicians as actors, in this case, Harry Connick Jr. Little Man Tate is one of the handful of times in my life as a journalist. Well, journalist, I've done a lot of journalism, but I hesitate to describe myself that way. Actually, when I went to the set for Film Comment magazine and watched some of the filming of Little Man Tate, this was in Cincinnati, or more precisely across the river in Frankfort, Kentucky, where the director, Jodie Foster, was using some kind of old warehouse to shoot in, which turned out to be rather hot for that purpose. I remember after hanging around for a couple of days, I was sitting off by myself taking notes, and Jodie Foster stuck her head around the corner and saw me and said, "You bored yet?" Which I wasn't really, although movie making can be tedious work. Harry Connick was not around at that point, but his natural performance is one of those demonstrations that sometimes the tools of the musician could be nicely adapted to the demands of movie acting. Aha, so we've come to the trailer now. And the only actual weird thing about this selection is that I'm violating my rule today about having these movie appearances by jazz men be fictional characters who have different names and all that, just because I want to include this track. The movie is Ball of Fire, 1941, directed by Howard Hawks, who we mentioned earlier on To Have and Have Not. And music is front and center in this variation on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, in which seven very fussy academics who are researching a massive new encyclopedia get hung up on the entry for slang, which leads Professor Gary Cooper to begin observing a saucy young woman who goes by the stage name Sugarpuss O'Shea, played by Barbara Stanwyck, as she can really sling the jive. In this scene, Sugarpuss is performing at a nightclub, and the band behind her is Gene Krupa's big band, led by the legendary drummer himself, who is spotlighted in a number called Drum Boogie.
Drummer stompin', drum boogie, drum boogie. It really is a killer, drum boogie, drum boogie. The drum boogie woogie. The rhythm won't offend you. It's really gonna send you drum boogie, drum boogie. It really is a killer, drum boogie, drum boogie. The drum boogie woogie. You hear the piano rompin'. See the drummer stomping. Drum boogie, drum boogie.
Drum boogie.
The cat's a killer diller. Drum boogie, drum boogie. The drum boogie woogie.
Come on, group, knock yourself out.
The joint is jumping with a drum boogie. Drum boogie. Drum boogie woogie. Yeah!
Yep, that's Drum Boogie, written by Roy Eldridge and Gene Krupa, performed in the film Ball of Fire by the Gene Krupa Orchestra, with Barbara Stanwyck doing the on-screen performance when her vocals ghosted by Martha Tilton. There's also a reprise of the tune in that movie with Krupa playing the song on a matchbox with two wooden matches as Stanwyck and the crowd egg him on. All right, we'll leave off there and go out with one more selection from the Anatomy of a Murder soundtrack, composed by Duke Ellington, and a number that features Ellington on screen with Jimmy Stewart, called Happy Anatomy, PI-5. As Ellington says in the scene, we are cutting out. I'm Robert Horton, and I thank you for listening to The Music and the Movies.